Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi. Tonight we have a special guest, an interview we did over at Joe Badali's after the game. His name's Rob Marshall. He's a defender, and we had a chance to talk to him. And you know what? It couldn't have been a better night. Apparently, we are currently under DDoS attack. Don't know what that means. I just know it means it's hard to get on the air. Let's put on this interview.
Okay, we're over at Joe Badali's. Everybody's had something to eat. Everybody's had something to drink. And tonight, maybe some of the fans are drinking a little more. Not a great outcome for the team, but, it's been that kind of season. It's up and down. And I'm with Rob Marshall. He's a defender for the Toronto Rock. The guys had a tough night tonight. That was a real... It really seemed like the team was snake-bit. You were going really well, and then you hit a wall.
Yeah, I mean, we came out. We had a great first quarter. And, we were up 7-5, 7-4 maybe at one point. And you know what? They come, they score three or four unanswered. You know, we're down two going into halftime. And, we kind of got away from our game plan. And, it just kind of fell apart from there. And, we just didn't stick to our game plan, basically. I mean, we were gap shots all night. And, Nick Rose and Zach Wojcik played unreal. I mean, they made saves when they need to, but I think our defense kind of let us down a bit.
I think that's a fair statement as well, but also your offense couldn't penetrate Vince. Vince was impenetrable today. As a defender, that must be very interesting to see from your perspective. You're watching the saves that he's making, and it was really making it difficult for you guys to really carry the day. You were really playing well, and I think at one point you were out shooting them 30-20, and basically Vince played. You got to give the guy credit. He played really well.
Yeah, he's a good goalie, but at the same time, we had our chances. He made some great stuff, but like I said, at the same time, our offense feeds off our defense, and our defense feeds off our offense, right? So, the defense was kind of struggling for a bit there, which, kind of slowed things down. They were getting their timely goals at some times, but, we need to create some more transition, create some more opportunities, and, maybe our offense will start clicking.
Well, it's only one game, so there's no point. Nobody's going to set this one aside and start again tomorrow. Let's get more on a personal level with you and your lacrosse experience. When did you start playing lacrosse, and what attracted you to the game?
I started when I was 3 years old. I grew up in a small town called Arthur. I have a big family, so all our cousins, were involved. It was basically the only thing to do in the summertime. So, we went out. 3 years old, just little guys, and we were kind of running around the floor, 10 guys chasing the ball, and we kind of grew up all together. It was good. I mean, we had the same core of group growing up, which is good, which we have, some real good friends. So, I started in Arthur, and, I started to end up junior B in Alora Mohawks, which I kind of looked up to when I was younger. We'd always go to the games, and, from there, got an open tryout from John Lovell and Terry Sanderson and just made the best of it.
It's a game that, I guess it'd be fair to say that the pool of players is not as, as clearly North American as it is Canadian, Southern Ontario, Native Canadians, and also the West Coast with Vancouver. It must be strange to play with local guys and then end up playing against them with, different cities like Colorado, Edmonton. It must be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you grow up summertime lacrosse in MSL. You grow up, playing with Cody Jamison, Craig Point, Stephen Keogh, all the guys from Rochester. And, they're good players and all, but, once the NL comes around, we're different teams, we're opponents. So you don't, there's no friendships involved. So you go out and you just, it's a battle.
How exciting was it the first time you strapped on the equipment to play pro? I'm sure that must have been real thrilling. What was the first thing that went through your head when you're coming out of the tunnel?
I came out of the tunnel for warm-ups. I looked around, and there was probably 1,000 fans, and I've never played in that big of a crowd before, that big of an atmosphere, for one. And, I would come out for the game time, and there's 18,000 out there. You get your first shift under your belt, make a play, try to get a big hit or a loose ball or something, and just go from there.
It has to be a wonderful experience. Thanks for taking the time with us. It's a long season. Today's only one game. There's always another game tomorrow. And they really are this year, as a defender, the one last question I'd like to ask you is the shorter bench. How does it affect you personally as a defender, in your opinion?
Well, where's the garbage can? You try to transition the ball a little more, stay up play for defender-wise. As a defender, you try to stay in play a little bit more, try to get the ball up there. With only being able to dress six offensive players, you need to rest once in a while. So you get up there, you kind of muck around, set some picks, and maybe you'll score one once in a while.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Rob Marshall, defender with the Toronto Rock.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. No relation to Gary Marshall, and no relation to Gary Grube. So the Rock had a tough game, and Jared Harris has mentioned that that game I went to, they lost. It was the first home game loss. Last time they won a home game, that was the last game I went to. And I'm not sure Jared wants me to go to the games anymore. I mean, I don't know. But I'm going to go on Saturday just to prove we can win when I'm there. Did I say we? Oops. I do it with the Argos. I do it with the Rock. Admit I'm a fan of the team. And, let's go. Okay, there you are. Okay. Now, I'm not sure at this point if Kelly Bale is here because of lacrosse. He said to call him, so I did. Kelly, are you here because of lacrosse?
Yeah, I just wanted to join the discussion and see how much stays on lacrosse, and just wanted to bring my retro kind of opinion.
Retro as in you were a lacrosse player or a lacrosse fan?
Yeah, I was a lacrosse fan in the first real push for lacrosse in Canada when the Rock first came out with the Calgary Roughnecks, and I believe the Rock won in about 97, and then the Roughnecks won the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I remember a lot of those players, and definitely checked the game out in Calgary as well, and yeah, it was a good time, and definitely need to know more about lacrosse, and that's why I want to participate.
Well, a guy that knows a lot about lacrosse is here right now. I tried getting a hold of Justin. Unfortunately, he's unavailable. Aaron is in BC. He's gone to visit Christopher Jones' territory. Hasn't gone
right
to visit
on.
Christopher Jones. He's gone to visit Christopher Jones' territory. He's my mm-hmm. other expert. And in the room with us right now is, I refer to it like an internet thing, in the room. On the phone with us right now is Gary Grube. Gary, hey.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Really good,
now,
Gary.
If you pay attention to the CFL show, you'll know that Kelly is one of my regulars on the CFL show. Jarrett used to be a regular on the CFL show, but he's a teacher. He has to mark exams and a very busy fella. And,
For sure.
So, it gets, he's a Hamilton fan. And Gary and I are Argo fans, but we have similarities in regards to Jared Harris is a Hamilton fan, but he's a Rock fan during lacrosse season. Lori Bursey is the head of the Friends of the Argonauts. She's a Rock fan. Lori and friends constantly bring Argos to the games, as Gary will attest to and is aware of. And so there is a connection, there is a connection between the CFL, something that you are very contacted to, or connected to, I should say, between lacrosse and Argonaut football here in Toronto. There also is a big connection between hockey and lacrosse. You mentioned the Calgary Roughnecks. And the Calgary Roughnecks are owned by the Calgary Flames, as are the Colorado Mammoths. And and the Colorado Mammoths are owned by the Colorado Avalanche. And Gary, you want to take it further, the connection
Buffalo
between
Bandits
hockey?
Owned by the Buffalo Sabres.
There you go.
And it goes on from there.
Right. So there is a connection. There's an intra-sport connection. There's lacrosse is a game that doesn't have a large fan base, but the similarities between lacrosse and let's say the National Lacrosse League, especially the Canadian teams, because those are the ones I know about, but the American teams as well, I know about Buffalo and Rochester. I'm not knowledgeable about Colorado, Vancouver, the Calgary Roughnecks. Yes. What I do notice is that the fans of lacrosse have a very similar passion and level of passion. They're both the same kind of passion. Gary, is that a fair statement?
It's a very fair statement. They'll live and die for their teams.
You know, it's a very CFL-like, atmosphere. It is that kind of excitement. And the players are at the same kind of, availability as, both CFL as, if you're a CFL fan, you know that you can pretty much walk up to a CFL player and say, hey, how you doing? And they'll say, hey, how you doing? And there's even a chance for some inter-conversation, if you will, some, banter, which is not, a real hockey or football in the U.S. or basketball, it's peculiar to the CFL and the National Lacrosse League. And I guess the easiest thing to say is that these guys are more down to earth. They actually have jobs as well as play the game professionally. So, they do have, a larger connection to the word humility. And that's something that I think is very similar between the two as well. So I've given my perspective on in respect to Kelly being on the air here with us, Gary. What similarities or what connections do you think I've missed? Oh, and plus the player, I forgot his name. I gotta look it up. He was drafted by the CFL and is playing in the NLL. And I'm sorry, I forgot his name. That would be another connection.
The other thing is the fan base. Lacrosse is a very, very tight-knit community, and it doesn't matter what city you go to, you're treated very, very well by most everybody. And with the CFL, it's a lot the same, too. Because they're smaller leagues, they tend to gravitate together on a similar interest. And it works for the both. And I say when we go head out to, whether it be Philadelphia, Rochester, Buffalo, the people are so good to us that we can't say enough about him. That's my biggest thing with the two.
Yeah, they're small fish in a big sea in Philadelphia, so any support that they get, I'm sure they're right behind it. I mean, one word that came to mind is just, and no negative connotations from this because it could be taken the wrong way, but kind of small town, down to earth, like Frank said, and I get it. Definitely felt that when I was at the Roughnecks game, and it's definitely a different type of atmosphere than if you're going to an NFL or an MLB game.
Definitely, and what you get in these things are true fans. There's no corporate stuff in there. You get people with their families because it's still affordable. You get the whole thing of absolute love for the sport. And really, you can go to any two teams. It doesn't matter if it's your home team or not. And you still get that love of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to enjoy the game. It gets a little hard, and I'm going to say this too. You know what's hard is when your team has won championships as much as Toronto has, and watching them go through these stretches is painful. It really hurts. I don't know, Gary, if it hurts you as much as it hurts me, but that's the
way.
Well,
we wanted to actually jump on and take a shift. So, so yeah, it does get painful.
To make it happen, right? Yeah,
pride swells when they win a championship, right? So you get connected to the team and you form that bond just like you would with a person or whatever. It's like a personal connection to your organization. And that's what we have here in Saskatchewan with the Rough Riders, not to get away from lacrosse at all. But and, you know, another parallel that you may have missed, Frank, was I'm from a rugby background as well. And, you know, I can draw a lot of parallels between lacrosse and rugby. A lot of our athletes in high school were crossover, both lacrosse and rugby. They're played in the same season, field lacrosse anyways. And, yeah, it's definitely that type of thing where you can, you know, take a two-hander from a guy during the game or a cross-check and then sit in the clubhouse after and have a beer, right? And that's the same thing about rugby. It's barbarians on the field and gentlemen in the clubhouse, right?
Totally.
Absolutely.
See, the one thing also with that fact of you have, you're invested in your team is what Jamie had done, Jamie Dalwick, the owner of The Rock, when they won the championship in 2011, was to all the season ticket holders, he had replica rings made and sent out with your season ticket.
Beautiful.
So, you know, in a sense, you had a piece of that championship.
That is awesome.
And I'd never seen that done before. I thought that was just such a class act.
Oh, unheard of.
Well, you know, what you're looking at here with the owner of The Rock is a parallel to a guy like Braley and guys who have been in Hamilton. I forget the owner of the team now there. The owner of the team in Hamilton. All of a sudden, I forgot his name. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the point is there have been a lot of owners that own the team, and we've said this before on the football show. Some guys own the team to make money. Well, this is not a league where you're going to make a lot of money, and this is a guy who's put far more into his team. And not only has he put in a lot, you know, in the team, he's put something into the league as well. He built a practice facility called the Track in Oakville here near Mississauga on his own dime, and players from around the league, not just the Toronto Rock, players from around the league practice there during the season. Gary, that's amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible. And to have that kind of facility, which is state-of-the-art, it was just, it had two things in mind. One was for his players, for the league, also to help minor league lacrosse get regenerated out in Oakville as well and have a regular place to play. And it's helped, you know, the best way to get a fan base is to have the kids involved, because the parents will come along. So instead of having one ticket sold, you have four tickets sold, and how to build a base that way. And he's been a genius that way.
Yeah, he really has. He's done a marvelous job. And it's that kind of stuff that endears him to the loyal fans that they have. Now, the crowd has shrunk a little bit here in Toronto, but you know, everything doesn't revolve around Toronto, and that goes without saying with the CFL as well, if the parallel's there as well with lacrosse. There are crowds showing up in Calgary. Buffalo's a mainstay. Rochester's incredible. Philadelphia's run on hard times just because their team hasn't been that good. The new location for the Washington team that took stops elsewhere is now in Vancouver. They're doing pretty good on the mainland. They don't have their stadium is on the mainland, and you have to live in Vancouver to understand the challenges there. And as far as whether you're on the island or you know, on the mainland, Colorado, owned by the Avalanche, they've got a pretty good fan base there, and so, you know, things are pretty good in general in the league. But there are going to be teams that sometimes start to, you know, go south attendance-wise. But that's not typical of all the teams at once. I don't know, Gary, you know, you're much closer to the game than I am. Am I kind of explaining it to a guy who doesn't know much about lacrosse and the National Lacrosse League? Am I accurately describing it for him and others who might be listening?
Yeah, I think you are. You're always going to have your base fans. You're going to have, you know, the nuts like me who are going to go to the games regardless. And as the teams do better, you know, you're going to get the casual fans more interested because interest loves a winner. But, you know, again, the fan base is growing at a regular rate. I wouldn't say that it's going crazy, but I would say at a pretty standard rate, it's moving along. And it's going in pretty much most cities in that regard. Even Philadelphia, like you said, had fallen on a bit of hard times. But they seem to have stabilized now, and they'll start moving it upward again because they're starting to get interesting also.
And you know, playing better always makes that, you know, that has a better impact on the team. But really what you really need is you need, like right now, Toronto is basically hung over from a couple of really good years, and now they're having a little bit of difficulty. And, you know, the fans aren't coming out, you know, in the numbers like 14 or 16 or 18,000. They're in the 10, 11, 12 range, which, you know, is not a bad turnout. I mean, they, you know, it's bigger than, let's say, they couldn't go to another stadium or arena in, you know, Southern Ontario here that would accommodate 10,000 people. They basically are enough that, you know, big league rink is where they need to be. So, you know, it's not like being an AHL team where, you know, or a junior team where, you know, your 5 to 8 is cool. You know, it's a little different.
Yeah.
With the Rock and with the National Lacrosse League. If, you know, if they had their druthers, the stadiums or arenas would be in the 12 to 16 range as opposed to the, you know, 6 to 12. So, yeah, so it is interesting. So what we do here is we'll take you along for a ride here. What we do is basically we review the week. And, you know, the week is an interesting thing. A lot of great things happen during the week. And one of the great things that happens is I get to play well, let's do this one. Let's do this one here. Then when we come back, we'll start doing our little around the horn, if you will.
Rock versus Calgary, Friday, January 3rd. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com.
Now, having said that, you don't have to just go to TorontoRock.com. You can go to NLL.com, and you can peruse the teams that are there, find one that you can reach, that you can go to live, and once you find that team, you can click on that team, and there is a link to buy tickets. And the prices of tickets are, you know, very reasonable when you consider it's a professional sporting event, and, you know, it's not in the hundreds. In fact, I was contemplating going to see Katy Perry at the ACC, and the tickets were $330 each, $280 each. And, of course, these were the 100 section and the floor seats. But that's top end, obviously. But, man, that's a pretty incredible amount of money. Now, I won't even mention how much it costs to go watch the Leafs play, you know, basically in and around there. You know, that's what it costs to go see a Leaf game. So we're talking about $40 for really good seats to go watch an NHL team, you know, Canadian. And generally around there, the ticket prices are about that. Probably a little bit less in the U.S., but still, no matter where you're watching, you can get really good seats. And if you have at all a desire to see excitement and to see heavy hitting and to see some incredible goaltending, which is what we've seen a lot of recently, probably more than the Rock would like to have seen. You know, it's been an interesting season thus far. And the season is a third of the way now, Gary?
We're in week 9, so we're at the halfway point.
Yeah, okay, halfway. All right, so we've made it to the halfway point. You know, so we've seen a fair bit of great stuff. You know, let's start with your opinion as to what makes you want to go to an NLL game.
With me, Frank?
Yep.
I would say just the sheer excitement of it all. It's a constantly moving, fast-paced game. It's all got all the best of all the other sports. It's got the fast breaks out of basketball. It's got the timelines out of basketball, the shot clock out of basketball as well. It's got the scoring and the ferociousness of hockey and football. You have a little bit of everything in there. You have a lot of fast-paced, really, really good passing, some great goals to see, excellent goaltending. You have terrific athletes. And there's just an excitement around the building because you have true fans all over the place who are going to go and live and die with their teams.
And you could meet Orlando Franklin of the Denver Broncos.
Yes, if you play your cards right, you can.
He was there at the last game. So back to football again. We just can't get away from it, Gary.
No, it's in our blood.
There you go. So let's begin with the NLL around the horn here, and we'll begin with NLL Live is going to have Toronto Rock goalie Rose. Rosie's going to be on their show, so you're going to get a chance on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to see an interview with the goaltender that has really been under fire a little bit. You know, the season has not gone well for the team. He has been a great goaltender at times, but that last game, I think more about, I really think that he had difficulty matching up, and he seemed to have lost his confidence all of a sudden, and he really had difficulty with the five hole. And the more Vince made those incredible saves, Gary, the more difficult it became for Rose. Did you see it that way?
Well,
that's the way I saw it. Anyway.
It became difficult for everybody, but what seemed to happen was he started off very, very well. I'd say the first 20, 25 minutes, the team played very well. But then for some reason, Rochester kicked it up a level. Toronto was caught flat-footed. Some goals that maybe shouldn't have gone in went in. And then the penalty started, the parade to the penalty box. And a couple of times after goals, Toronto was taking penalties. So then they go on the power play again. And now, again, you're going to have another thing happening. So there was a lot of factors into it. But
it wasn't Rose. We'll get to the rest of the team. I don't mean to interrupt. Actually, I do mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to give people an idea of Rose and the situation. Maybe the interview might have something in there about that game. So it'll be very interesting to hear what Rose has to say. We are going to talk about the games this week, and I'll remind you the teams that are in the league. The Buffalo Bandits, this is the Eastern Division, Buffalo Bandits, Minnesota Swarm, Philadelphia Kings, Rochester Nighthawks, and the Toronto Rock, five teams in the East. There are four teams in the West, the Calgary Roughnecks, Colorado Mammoth, Edmonton Rush, and the Vancouver Stealth. So let's go now to what we were talking about, which basically, you know, is those games that took place this past week. And as usual, I have to confirm that I have the right dates. Right now, it's just, the 15th. Yeah, the 15th and the 14th. Okay, let's go Friday. Aaron's not here to correct me when I'm wrong. So we'll go to the Pepsi Center in Denver and talk about the Vancouver Stealth. They won 19-9, and that was the kind of weekend it was. It seems the teams that won handily, and this game was won handily by Vancouver over the Colorado Mammoth.
It was, and you had the usual suspects. You had the Reese Dutches and people like that, but you had one person who we haven't seen in a while put up numbers like this, and that was Brett Bucktooth, and it was great to see him putting up these kind of numbers to see that he's back in form. And I'll bet you people in Buffalo are kicking themselves for letting him go now.
I don't think they are. I there was some question about why he left Buffalo. You could say this is one of those things that worked out well for both teams. Bucktooth left Buffalo, and Buffalo has improved and played very well. Much of the credit has gone to the coach. But still, you know, Bucktooth's a good player, and he's fitting in really well there. You know, it's something that is always nice to see. A trade or an exchange or relocation of a player that works for the old team and the new team. That's a pretty good deal right there.
Oh, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
So Colorado, difficulty. This is a team that we've been waiting to rise up and play to a potential that is more akin to a playoff team. They haven't done that, and they haven't done it, you know, and it seems as though they're missing something, and they just can't seem to, you know, I don't know, take that step into the season. It's just hard to believe that they're playing this badly. What do you think?
It's strange because they've shown signs of brilliance, and then they've shown signs of absolute non-interest. And with the kind of firepower that they have, what I've been saying all season long is they seem to not have that secondary scoring. It's only one or the other that's scoring. Nobody seems to be hot other than one person on one night, and they can't sustain on a regular basis like that.
All right, let's move on to the Saturday games. That would be Saturday, February 15th, and that happens to be a night when the rest of the games were played, four games. The first one in the XL Energy Center featured the Edmonton Rush defeating the Minnesota Swarm 14-9. And this Edmonton Rush team, I've been waiting for the bubble to burst. Gary, it hasn't burst yet.
No, that's a team that I think is the class of the West, might be the class of the league. It seems to have all the components just sitting there ready now. Their offense has been great for a couple of years. Their defense has been solid, and now I think it's past solid to almost an all-star caliber. Their goaltending has been solid all year long. I think Aaron Bold has found his niche and absolutely is playing lights out. So I really, the next team in line or the next two teams, I really don't feel comfortable because I think that they're just a steamroller right now, and everything is just clicking beautifully.
And good for them. You know, Edmonton has a winner. Kind of difficult in Edmonton. This is a team that the city, the community can gravitate to with a lot of pride, you know, and you know, it is the championship city, and this team looks like it's ready to really challenge for the championship in the NLL. And solid gold or silver cup will definitely be challenged by them. But the next game up was one that you and I were at, and as well as Jared Harris. Actually, it was unusual because Aaron William Freelander was one game that he hasn't been at in a long time. And it was the Rochester Nighthawks defeating the Toronto Rocks 17-9. The game started with so much hope and so much, I don't know, great offense. Reasonable, good goaltending. The team looked like, you know, they were playing at a level that they needed to play against a great team like Rochester, one that won the championship last year. And it seemed to me once they got in front, it was, I think, 7-4. They had a shots differential of 30-20 approximately over Rochester. Then Rochester came within range, and I think they scored,
Nine in a row.
Average that out, and they really fell apart. And it was terrible. It was heartbreaking to watch.
It was a long evening, but some of the positives out of there. Colin Doyle had four goals right off the start, and it's wonderful to see our leader, our captain, coming with that kind of scoring punch because he's been mostly the setup guy most of the year. So he just took it on his shoulders and started. The team looked really, really good. The first quarter, they looked great, most of the second quarter, and then it just went the other way, and it went the other way like a waterfall, and that was the end of that. But Matt Vince, to his credit, the goalie for Rochester, stood on his head because he faced an awful lot of rubber. It wasn't as though the Rock just broke his head, and that was he
early.
Faced a lot of rubber, and he made some absolutely phenomenal saves.
When his team needed the saves. It is, you know, the textbook definition of great goaltending is to make the saves to keep your team in the game. And that's what he did. Vince just, he made stops when his team really needed it. And I guess it's fair to say, too, he frustrated the heck out of the Toronto Rock. And then, you know, Rochester would go to the Rock zone and they'd go five hole. There must have been, to my count, at least six or seven goals in a row were five hole. Now, is that Rosie's fault? Not necessarily. You know, if anybody in this league, in the National Lacrosse League, is facing a goaltender and there's no defender or someone harassing them and not letting them have a free look, you know, you give these guys a free look and, you know, it can be pretty devastating to a goaltender. And he was. I mean, normally he goes to the bench and he opens and closes the gate. That night, he was his eyes were glazed over, and he was very, very unhappy. And I think, you know, you don't say this about athletes, and if you tell him I said this, I'll deny it. He looked really hurt, like really hurt that it went this way, and I think he felt some of it was guilt. I don't think he deserved it, you know. But unfortunately, when your team abandons you, you have to try and somehow keep your team in it. It didn't happen for him on Saturday night, and it surely did in spades with Vince. Vince was incredible.
For Nick, he's a very low-key kind of guy, and usually it's like a duck water off the back. And when I was talking with him later on, and that's exactly the way it was, it's just one game. Well, let's just catch it, and we'll start over next week. So I was glad to hear that. But, yeah, the biggest tilt for me was usually on a timeout, he's coming over the bench talking with Zach and, you know, doing a few other things. He wasn't leaving his net at timeouts, TV timeouts, anything else. He was just there. So that was a big tell for me.
Yeah, he had a tough night. And, you know, there's always tomorrow. And the great thing about professional sports is it's not one game a season. So there is a ninth week to go through, and they'll be doing that this coming week. The Philadelphia Wings
and the usual
were
suspects. It wasn't as though there were no names that were getting on them. You know, you're talking about Cody Jameson, who was a class of the league with 5 goals, 5 assists. Dan Dawson had 10 assists. You know, these guys are just, you know, these are all-star caliber players, so he wasn't being beaten by nobodies.
No. And this team is a championship team.
Oh, yeah, you know, from top to bottom.
So that's, you know, and the goaltending, as great as it was, their offense and defense, and you know what? They were superior physically to the Rock, and I think that's what ended up happening. Their physicality took over. The Rock did not have an answer, and, you know, I don't like saying stuff like this, but one bad call by the official, in my opinion, turned the game around. There was a clear boarding penalty that should have been called, and while the Rock player was down, they scored the goal that gave them the first lead, and I think that's when things turned around. And then the Rock tried to play bigger than they are, or, you know, were, and were unable to challenge them. And of course, they had to heighten their aggressiveness to the point where what you alluded to, and that is, you know, it was not a championship parade; it was a parade to the penalty box. And
that's exactly it. And then Rochester tightened up their D. They were able to keep the Rock to the outside, so Matt Vince didn't have a whole lot of inside shots. A lot of them were coming from 30 feet out, so he was able to see everything very, very clearly.
Yeah, and then the guys were, the shots they were taking were under duress. So let's move on to the game at the First Niagara Center, where the Buffalo Bandits defeated the Philadelphia Wings 13-7. And this is another team that this year has made inroads into the East. You know, usually it would be the usual suspects would be Toronto and Rochester would be fighting it out. And this year, Buffalo has usurped Toronto's position. And they are the concern for the Rochester Nighthawks, the defending champs. And their full value, Buffalo, are for what they're doing. They have really put a great season together thus far, haven't they?
They have, and to their credit, they're good on all aspects right now. Cosmo has been lights out in net. He had another 46-shot night, so it wasn't as though he had a vacation. The players that are on offense have been absolutely clicking together. The biggest thing I think there, well, there's two things. Number one, moving Mark Stainhouse back to the forward instead of in transition, I think was huge. And getting Ryan Benesch from Minnesota, which I think is Minnesota's problems right now, and putting him in that lineup as a playmaker, all you got to do is look at the stats. And Stainhouse had 3 goals, 2 assists. Benesch had 1 goal and 5 assists. Tavares had 1 goal and 5 assists. So the playmakers are making the plays, and the guys who were supposed to be scoring are scoring. And the defense under Cordingley, the same thing he did when he was in Toronto, has made this defense scary, absolutely scary to try and break in on. So they only have upside here. So I don't think this is any fluke. I think this team is absolutely on the right path now.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody could suggest that this is a fluke. It's gone on too long during this season. I mean, you know, for them to fall apart at this point, halfway through the season, seems very unlikely. You know, they could, you know, if the Rock could, you know, start putting some stuff together, some games together, they could challenge them. At the end of the day, Buffalo has done really well. Philadelphia has struggled. We've mentioned their struggles. You know, this is a team that a very good team over the years. The past couple of years, they've had a little bit of difficulty. And a game like 13-7, you know, it, just like the Rock losing their game, you know, losing in this fashion doesn't do well for the fans. The fans, you know, they need to feel like their team can challenge. And that's the toughest part of selling a game, is you have to have teams that are fairly even on at least most nights. They weren't on this night, and they haven't been on a few nights, but I think the fans will be rewarded. Philadelphia is making some changes, and they've had to make some serious changes before this year, and they'll continue to make changes. And the pool of players that's in lacrosse, we saw and we see how quickly a team can, you know, find success. Buffalo did that over 1 year. So a couple of right moves, the right coach maybe if this one isn't right, a couple of key players, and things can change for Philadelphia. The Calgary Roughnecks were at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome being visited by the Vancouver Stealth. And, well, the Roughnecks were a little rough on Vancouver. 20-9, Kelly, you'd be happy with this score.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess if I had to choose a team right now, I'd be the only team I've seen live. So I believe the team they were playing, I didn't hear you guys call their name. I don't remember.
Vancouver Stealth.
No, but the game I saw several years ago, I think they're a defunct team now, whatever team they were playing, because none of those names rang a bell.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Wings have been around for a very long time, as have the Roughnecks and the Bandits. Right, Gary? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've all been, well, the Bandits have been around since the Mill League.
Yeah.
So Major the Rock indoor came in front. In 98, and that was part of the new NLL.
I think the Roughnecks came into the picture mid-90s, guys.
Yeah, about 91 or 92.
Yeah, somewhere around there, early mid-90s.
And they immediately were a force. I believe it was their second year they'd won a championship. So,
well, yeah. we've discussed the games, and I guess what we can do now is we'll go to the standings. Normally we go to the away games, but let's go to the standings and see where they sit, and then we'll talk about the games that they have coming up. The standings are important. Gary, as quickly as you can, well, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, explain the playoff picture. We've mentioned already that there are five teams in the East and four teams in the West. How you get
the,
into
the top three in each division are what make the playoffs. So two in the East are going to be watching it on TV, and one in the West.
Yeah.
And the first place teams are going to get byes, and second and third place teams are going to be playing each other for the right to hit the semifinals.
Right.
And there is an unusual way, one that, again, this is kind of coincidental that Kelly would be here, you know. The Rock and the rest of the league are playing the playoffs like the old CFL days. You remember, Kelly, when they used to play the home and away game, and if there was a tie, they had the mini game at the end at the, you know, the team that finished ahead of the other?
Yeah, for sure.
You remember the two-point total game?
That format. Yeah.
And that's what they do in the NFL now. You win. It's a best two out of three, really. The first game on the road for the team that finished in first, and mm-hmm. then at their home, and then there's a mini game played to determine the tiebreaker. So another football connection. So that's what you've got to do. And right now, Buffalo, Rochester, and Toronto find themselves in first. although Philadelphia has the same amount of wins as the Toronto Rock, the Rock have two less losses. So, you know, you can't take back those two wins. So those two games in hand, all the Rock need to do to get ahead of Philadelphia is to win one of those games. The Minnesota Swarm is, 1-6. They can't be any further away from a playoff spot than that. In the West, we've got the Edmonton Rush that we spoke about, and the amazement with which they have taken to this season. They are 7-0. Now the next three teams, only one of them is going to get kicked out. But I'll tell you something, very close. You've got Calgary at 4-3, Colorado at 4-6, and Vancouver at 3-7. Calgary has a lot of games in hand. They've only played seven, while Colorado and Vancouver have played 10. So Calgary's pretty safe. So really what it's going to boil down to, Gary, are those last two teams.
Yeah, definitely. Say Calgary and Colorado, they've been pretty much middle of the road. Vancouver has shown signs of greatness. They've shown signs of absolute ineptness. But this weekend, to be a prime example, they're up 19-9 one night and lose 20-9 the next night. So it's a tale of two different teams coming to the games. But it's a very, very close thing in the West, and it'll be a very interesting thing to watch. I don't think there's going to be much challenge to Edmonton for the division lead. But, again, we're still only halfway through the season, and there's a lot of things that can happen.
Well, Edmonton became 7-0 in half the season. So, you know, I'm not saying they can go to 0-7, but another team could duplicate that and go 7-0 and could change things a little bit. Again, though, three teams don't make the playoffs, six do. And in the East, two teams are out, one team in the West. And with the closeness of record between Colorado and Vancouver, that's going to be a dogfight. The biggest problem for the Rock, they'll have one opponent I think they need to concern themselves with. It doesn't look like it'll be the Minnesota Swarm. Ironically, the team that eliminated them in the playoffs last year, their concern will be Philadelphia. And they're going to be hard-pressed to catch Buffalo and Rochester. Those two teams have just done a great thing. But having mentioned Minnesota defeating Toronto last year in the playoffs, it was a one-game thing. And that one game, you know, it's much easier to win that one game than it will be for the Rock to surprise either Buffalo or Rochester. They invented this rule because they want to eliminate, that kind of finish, I think, that Toronto had. They were in first overall, and not to talk about Toronto, but more to talk about the way the league works. So they've decided to give the better teams a better opportunity to make up for and or not be upset as easily as Toronto was. You know, it doesn't seem like much of a reward to finish first and then lose one game and you're gone. That seems pretty severe. Gary?
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. This just evens it out. The fluky win to the next round, that should be over and done with. Now, two wins, that'll do it. Now, the question and the interesting thing would be this. If you won the first game and you are losing the second game, do you just kind of pull your hook out of the water and just kind of rest your guys and hopefully you have enough energy for the 10-minute game? The mini game.
So what there, you're
there's
saying
where,
is,
there's where the interesting
so
strategy
what,
things.
So what
looking.
You're saying, Gary, is you think that a team can turn on and off their ability to play well?
Well, if you're already
if
you're losing,
by the way, that's my answer. By the way,
if you're losing in that second game, do you go in full bore, depending on what the score is, of course, or do you kind of start resting players for that mini game? That's the kind of strategy I think is we're going to start seeing.
Oh, absolutely. Someone will be tempted with that, especially if there's a reason. I think for that to happen, there has to be a reason why they're doing it. For example, if they've got a player who kind of hurt himself, not enough to take him out of the game, but of concern that he hurt himself a little bit more too soon. You know, make sure he's okay and give him a chance to recover a little bit, a little extra time with some ice and or whatever other, redeeming method there is for, basically taking care of an injury, I could see. But, I think most teams, if you really, really ask them, the last thing they want to do is step it down a gear, because getting it back up to the right gear is not that easy. I think turning, you know, good play on and off is very difficult. Kelly, you can talk to this issue. It's more than just talking about lacrosse.
Oh, for sure. You know, I mean, there's definitely times, I mean, like, I don't want to get too off topic from lacrosse, but you saw it in the Latvia game today, if you watched the Olympics.
Yep.
Those guys really turned it on, you know, in the first period. And then, you know, you saw the fatigue of playing the previous day and, you know, take its toll on, especially the goalie hunched over for better part of two periods, just gasping for air pretty much.
And no water on that. And no water on the net.
I know. That was weird, hey?
I've never seen that of you.
No,
I know I saw water
Nolan.
On the nets in the Olympics this year. I remember
Teddy
seeing
Nolan
water.
Whipping the horse.
I can't believe it. Yeah, and the kid is what? Kid was 22 that was in goal, and you know,
yeah.
Physically he was drained, and there were suggestions by the announcers that possibly, you know, they were resting him. This is exactly what I mean here. You know, not necessarily a goalie. And this is part of my answer, Gary, to that question or to that idea of resting people. Yeah, if you have to rest somebody because you don't want them to burn out before you think they're going to burn out in the next couple of minutes, then you know you do something about it. But I really have this I don't know.
You're thinking about games that are 13-11, 13-10. I'm talking about games that are completely out of hand.
Yeah,
If this game is 19-9, you're not putting guys out in that second half to start doing.
Well, let me ask Kelly. That's inevitable, that's my concern. Kelly, do you think
sports is creatures of a habit. If you want to see it a lot, all it needs to do is happen once, and then you're going to start seeing it a lot.
Right,
Kelly. Do you think that teams can turn off and on their game?
I think they can. I've seen it before. I've witnessed it in all different sports. I don't know if it transfers to lacrosse, but I'm almost positive it does. I mean,
okay.
If you're losing by a big score, it's already off. So you're going to do anything you can to try and find a way to turn it back on.
That's that Canadian spirit.
Yep, I guess so.
Never say die.
Oh, no.
Throw it
off. That's the problem I have is I don't believe in giving I give no quarter, dime, nickel, or there are no more pennies, so you know it is what it is. But yeah, it'll make for some. You're right though. You're totally right about your suggestion that it'll create a topic for discussion as to whether after a game is won or lost that is followed up by a mini game. Did they tank or did they take their foot off the accelerator at the end of the second game in preparation for the mini game? Good question, and it'll be a good question for every coach to answer depending on what circumstances they find themselves in that second game and how badly they're being beaten, I guess. So, yeah, well put, Gary. Good question, good comment, and thanks, Kelly, for your input on that. Let's move over now. We are listening to Candid Frank Live. This is the National Lacrosse League edition, and this is our week 8. It is February 19th. This program is heard every Wednesday between 9 and 11 p.m., except for one week where it ended at 10:30 and we did a doubleheader of the CFL. So now... we find ourselves looking at the upcoming games, and we see that the Rock will be visited on Saturday by the Minnesota Swarm, and that'll be a team that they need to continue to push down. And the way they'll do that is by winning against them at the Air Canada Centre on Saturday, February 22nd. So, Gary, this game... this could be the end of the season for Minnesota. Maybe early to suggest that, but it sure is going to be uphill for them if they lose in Toronto on Saturday.
I think so. I think this is a very, very crucial game for Minnesota. I think it's an important game for Toronto, but I think Minnesota, this is the season. This is whether they start having a fire sale after this or not. I expect that after last week, the Rocks' offense, I imagine they went through a pretty hectic practice the other night. I imagine that that's going to be on all cylinders, absolutely on all cylinders. And I expect that the defense is going to tighten up quite a bit too. So, and look for Rose to bounce back. So I think Minnesota is in pretty tough this weekend altogether, because I believe they're playing on Sunday too, are they not, Frank?
You're asking if the Rock are playing on Sunday or Minnesota?
Minnesota,
yes. They're playing on Sunday as well.
And they're playing Philadelphia. So let's hope if the Bear got poked, they don't wake up until Sunday and they start doing us a favor too by beating on Philadelphia.
Yeah, and you know, Minnesota at 1-5, if they lose, they'll end up being 1-6. The Rock will be 4-3. So that'll be a gap that will be very helpful to the Rock in being able to play day-to-day and try to get their game in order rather than worry too much about having to win the next game. They can more or less concern themselves with getting their game in order. In the next game on Saturday, the other game on Saturday, it is being played in the Scotiabank Saddledome in Calgary, Alberta, the home of the Calgary Roughnecks, who are being visited by the Rochester Nighthawks. Now, this game is very important, I think, emotionally for Calgary and to keep on a good roll for Rochester. Rochester's at 5-2, Calgary at 4-3. If Calgary can come out with a victory, they can be level with the champions from last year, Rochester. They'd both be at 5-3. So you see the difference between these two teams, at least wins and losses, very small margin, Gary.
Yeah, very small, but also remember, if Rochester wins, they're tied with Buffalo for first place in the East at 6-2. And I think that's going to be a pretty big swaying point, too, because otherwise they're 5-3, and Toronto can creep up and catch them as well still.
Right.
And Calgary has been looking very, very good of late. Transitionally, Snyder's back on key. Poulin's been playing very well. They're getting offense from all kinds of players. Of course, they're being led by Mr. Sean Evans, who's not only setting things up now, but also he's got his scoring intact. So it's going to be quite the game to watch.
A very good game to watch. The Calgary fans are going to be in for a treat. And if Rochester comes into the Saddledome the way they did into the ACC this past week, Calgary's going to really have to raise their game up a notch because Calgary can handle the physicality a little better than Toronto. Rochester was very physical with Toronto, and I don't doubt for a second that they're going to come at Calgary with a little bit of physicality again this week. It bode them well last game, and you know, go to the well when it's working, right?
Well, the other thing to remember too is that Toronto doesn't have a face-off man right now, and as much as we'd like to try, and we tried Merrill there, we've tried Scotty Johnson there, we don't have a face-off guy. Calgary does. Calgary's got Mr. Snyder, Mr. Jeff Snyder, who is only behind his brother Bob in loose balls, face-offs, anything you can think of in that. So the transition game and being able to have the ball right off the hop is in Calgary's favor, which right away puts Rochester in a different mindset. So it's not going to be such an aggressive offensive team that's going to come. So if Calgary's offense is rolling, that could be a whole different aspect. And then you start getting that home crowd going in there, which is their seventh man. Then I think, you know, Rochester's in for quite the evening. So, again, there's an awful lot of different things to play. And Poulin is every bit as athletic as Vince. So we can have a battle on every single level in this game. This game is something worth watching.
And for those that are not as aware of, and we'll speak to Kelly about this. Kelly, the thing is, in lacrosse, unlike basketball, there are similarities between basketball and lacrosse because of the shot clock. The only difference is,
right,
and it's a major, major difference. When you score, you don't lose the ball. You go to a face-off, you can get the ball again, and that was the main thing that killed the Rock. Nine consecutive goals were due to face-off wins by Rochester. And so you keep possession of the ball. In that case, you know, once you have the ball, it's like basketball. You get your chance to score. But in basketball, the game stays a little closer because as soon as you score, the other team gets the ball. Well, lacrosse, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. And, you know, one thing like that I am learning, and I'm glad you guys mentioned it, was Calgary and Rochester. I was going to ask you guys if they play interdivisionally like the CFL does. And, you know,
they
see that 5-4, 5 in the East, 4 in the West. That's the same as it was last year in the CFL. And, you know, you see this old playoff format from the CFL. So yeah, there really, really is a lot of similarities there.
What isn't like the CFL? The CFL has a short week, but it's still, it resembles a week. You know, there's like, I think the minimum I've seen is like 4 days, right? About four or 5 days, right? Well,
four,
you play the next night here. You play the next night here.
So how does that work?
You fly out or you bust out the night of and get there and hopefully get a little bit of rest before you have to be back at the rink the next day.
You know, we saw in last week, we were talking about last week and how you had a role reversal in one night. Well, you know, they won, I'm trying to remember now.
Vancouver, yes. Won 15-9 on the...
And then lost 20-9.
Yep, on the Saturday night they lost 20-9.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
yeah, so they were obviously fatigued from travel, but it wasn't that big a travel. But obviously they were fatigued.
Well, you know, it's a challenge. This is a challenge that, you know, the National Lacrosse League has, the players, I mean. And, you know, they have to schedule the games. And this is, again, shall we have another similarity? It just so happens that this year in the CFL, there are five teams in one division, four in the other again, you know. And they're going to have this, but they're not going to make a team because they want to have all the teams play every weekend. There isn't going to be a double. You know, there's going to be a bye week. So, you know, that's the difference.
So the one thing I still don't get, guys, is you said that, like, teams have played about 7-8 games so far. So, you know, how long is this season? And like,
we're in week 9.
I'll have to take a look at the schedule. I apologize to everybody.
No, don't worry about that.
We can
start at the end of December and it runs to the middle of May. The championship will be hoisted by the middle of May.
Okay.
And we're in week nine right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? We're in week 9 and the Rock have only played 7 games.
But yet you have a team like Colorado has played 10 games.
There you go.
Right.
So they've had a number of doubles already. So
And they'll finish with singles because of it. Because eventually, by virtue of the fact that they all play within a reasonably the same window of time, you know, you're eventually going to have to make up the games you haven't played.
Right.
And the games that you have played more than, you know, one a week, you're going to get some time, a little less hectic schedule. And right now, Rochester's will be in Calgary, as we said, and that'll be a very big game. And that, of course, is on Saturday, February 22nd. And then this week we also have a game on Sunday, and it features the Minnesota Swarm at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, PA. Minnesota is 1-6. Philadelphia is 3-6. And as Gary said, you know, Minnesota on this night could do the Rock a favor by beating the Philadelphia Wings. So, you know, these two teams are at the bottom, and the Rock has some breathing room ahead of these two teams. But one of them's going to have another win by the end of the weekend. Right, Gary?
Yeah,
and we were talking about crucial games. I think that would be a crucial game for Philadelphia because that dictates whether they're going to be moving forward or trying to dump and restart again also. So there's a lot of crucial things here in the midway point of the season.
Well, you know, if a couple of teams end up out of the hunt, you know, and as does happen in all kinds of leagues, we know that the Rock need a face-off guy. If a face-off guy, you know, springs loose and they can trade for him or he becomes a free agent or whatever happens, but somehow they end up with a decent faceoff guy. That'll create a big change in their play. And that's when, you know, teams, you know, become sellers and buyers when it's important. It's not so much how many players are out there. It's a question of the right one being out there for you. And I think two qualities that the Rock need to work on, in my opinion, are size and face-offs. And I don't know if they can get both in one player, but if they could, that's who I'd be hunting down right now.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I agree with you, Frank. And I think, first and foremost, I think they need that face-off guy because it's just it's such a glaring thing to lose most every face-off and to have the guys who are taking it at a 30% level and not really their niche of taking face-offs but doing whatever they can. So to have somebody who's a pure face-off and transition guy to do things, that would be a huge step forward.
And looking at the teams, we highlighted one of Toronto's weaknesses and something they need help in. If Philadelphia wins, what do you think they need to build on?
Philadelphia, well, when everybody's rolling, they seem to have quite a bit of scoring, but they seem to be giving up quite a bit on the defense. So I would say they would start be looking for some more defensemen, more of the guys to block the shooting lanes than what they've been doing, because it seems as though as soon as they start scoring, they're giving them up almost as quickly. The goaltending thing, I think they solved. They had Miller re-signed a week ago, so now you have Evan Kirk and you have Brandon Miller back there. So I think between the two of them, they can solve the goaltending issues, but I think more of it has to do with their defense than anything else, because when you have their forwards are fine. You have Buchanan, you have Hall, you have Roth, you have Crowley. They're all really, really fine players. I think their big thing would be looking for defense.
A victory by Philadelphia this next weekend would cement Minnesota being a team that could very well be a seller. And right now, the way the standings look, we've discussed the Eastern Division. Minnesota would sink to 1-7 if they lose to Philadelphia this week. And if they lose to Toronto as well, it'll be 1-8. That definitely will put them in the seller category. Philadelphia won't yet be in the seller category, and I don't think we have any sellers in the West right now because they're pretty tight, and I don't think any team is out of the picture playoff-wise. So really, right now, you would think that the one team that would be scouted pretty heavily would be the Minnesota Swarm. And who do you think that they might shake loose?
Well, there's a number of players. You see, the one thing that Minnesota has that no other team has is they have a number of first-round picks over the next few drafts, just from deals they've made in the past few years. And so they are available to make these kind of deals, regardless whom it might be. But offhand, I need to look at my stats.
Goaltending?
I would assume a few of their defensemen that they would probably be willing to give up at a price because everybody is in need of that, and they could probably get people to overpay for them, i.e. with more draft picks and some solid people. You know, like say Mike Hobbins just got in there from the Toronto Rock last year. He'd probably be one of the first ones to go because he's getting up there in age. Jeff Gilbert's another one who could probably be one of going another former Rock. So there's a number of people there. Tal, who isn't playing this year, who's been on their practice roster, he'd be another one. So there's a number of possibilities.
I was just looking to see if they had a face-off guy. I guess Jordan McIntosh.
Yeah, but I really can't see him getting ready. He's untouchable.
Yeah.
I think that's him.
Yeah, and he hasn't been actually. He wouldn't be that attractive right now. He's, you know, he's 68 and 86, so you know he's at 44%. You know, if you're the Rock, you're looking for a guy, maybe around if you could get him loose, and you know around this plus over 50%. Somebody that wins more than they lose. Mind you, though, their face-off win percentage is so weak that maybe 44.2 would look good on their stat sheet. Yeah,
or
so, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, defensively, you know, they've got some guys on that team, as you said. You know, their team defense has been very good. They have two goaltenders. And right now, Zach Higgins, I think it's fair to say that after what Tyler Carlson did in the playoffs last year, you would think that Tyler would be the better one. And I'm wondering if somebody might try to, you know, to pick Tyler Carlson off this roster. And
Philadelphia took Evan Kirk from them in a deal. So they had Carlson and Kirk last year, which was a great 1-2 punch. And now Kirk in Philadelphia, I'm not so sure they want to get rid of another goalie.
Well, Zach Higgins is playing well enough that, you know, if they've got another, you know, and it's funny, you know, it seems in every sport, especially with goaltenders, you get teams that just somehow they find goaltenders. And then you have the teams that can't find a goaltender. You know, Tyler Carlson.
Well, they had Cosmo, too, and they since he wouldn't report to them, they traded him to Buffalo for a couple of first-round picks. So they've had that kind of luck of being able to have good goaltenders on their roster. So.
Well, they're selecting good goaltenders. So, you know, like, I really was impressed with Tyler Carlson. I think that, you know, he would be great here in Toronto, you know, near his hometown. I think he's from Brampton. I think that's where he's from. I think he's from Brampton. He's a Brampton kid, if I'm not mistaken. I'll just check. He went to Seneca. Okay. That doesn't say where he was.
So we can't hold that, right?
No. Well, that tells you that he's, you know, a neighbor. It's an Ontario, you know, college. So, you know, he's from this. I believe he's from Minnesota. He plays in Minnesota, but he's from Brampton. So, you know, I don't know. I think he looked good in the Nets. I don't want to say that I've lost faith in Rosie, but I really do think that, you know, we got to find out what this team can do, the Rock team can do, with a goaltender that has a great night and that can steal a game here and there. Has Rosie stolen any games?
No, but I don't think he's been the cause of with the exception of the one game, I don't think he's been the cause. The games in Buffalo, he played, I would say, lights out for 40, 45 minutes of those games. And in the other 15 minutes, he didn't look that bad. The Rochester game in Rochester, I thought he looked not bad, not great, but not bad. He hasn't won any, but I don't think he's lost any until this last one. So, you know, like might cut him slack for one more game.
Oh, hey, no, hey, listen, you know, to me, I really take, there's a few positions on a team that I consider critical and crucial. Firstly and foremostly, the most important position on a team is GM. The second most important and the first most important decision a GM can make is hiring a coach. And the next most important decision that the GM can do is that he starts his team. I hate to repeat what Burke said, you know, but he's right. You know, in baseball, in lacrosse, in hockey, down the middle is what matters. And they really need to have some strength in goal, and they have to have some strength at center, which is winning faceoffs. And, you know, and right now, Toronto, in my opinion, those are their two weakest positions, down the middle, goaltending and faceoff guys. So, you know, they've got to do something to make that better. Now, is Rosie the problem? No, I don't think Rosie's the problem, but he's not the solution either right now. And he has to show that he can steal a game. And if you want to win a championship, 9 times out of 10, great goaltending is going to help you do that. And in every sport, we talk about defense, and I don't think there's anybody more important or critical in putting together a decent defense. You know, a goaltender can really erase a lot of mistakes that appear in front of him suddenly. Right now, Rosie doesn't seem to be, things aren't that rosy for Rosie. So, you know, that's where I would go if I were the Rock. You know, fix things down the middle. They're not doing too well down the middle. What other teams
I agree with you totally.
What other teams do you see, you know, doing their thing?
How's that, Frank?
Buffalo and Rochester, they're pretty set. You don't see them giving anything away. You don't see any hole they need to plug or any support they need at a position. They're set in goal.
I don't, actually. You know, I think they're, they're two very, very solid teams. Earlier in the year, I would have said Buffalo probably needed some defensemen, but they seem to be moving rapidly along, and again, they've all bought into Cordingley's system, so and this seems to work very well. And the one guy who really is surprising me is one who I've been on for quite a bit, is Priolo. And he, to me, had been more or less a pylon for a couple of years of just being their muscle. And this year, his offensive prowess, as well as his defensive smarts, have come out. He's not taking dumb penalties. He's actually being quite good in the defensive structure. And, again, he's being aggressive but not over the line to sit out and penalize his team. So I think Buffalo's in great shape. Rochester, they're still the same team as they were with the last two championship years. And if anything, they're firing on all cylinders right now. So I don't think you're going to see any movement from either of those two teams.
There you go. And in the West, anything can happen just because of the closeness of the teams in the standings.
I think another week or two before things start moving outward and wherever, and then we'll start seeing. Vancouver's already made a few moves, you know, getting draft picks, whatever, getting, well, The Rock got Hostrauser from them, and a few other small things. But if they keep going in the southern direction, then maybe you're going to start seeing them ahead of everybody else.
It'll be interesting, to say the least. And the teams that look to be making the playoffs that are on sort of the bubble, if they actually look like they're going to make the playoffs, those will be candidates for making maybe an addition here or there if it's not too expensive. But in lacrosse, a first-round draft choice is a pretty big deal. And to give that up, you really got to hope. You're probably banking on you want to be one of the teams at the end of the show.
Guys? Yeah, I agree on that.
Can I jump in here for a second?
Yeah, go ahead, Kelly.
Excellent. Guys, I'm just wondering, you know, there's a lot of, you know, well, let's just say it's hard to pick on a team that's 7-0 in Edmonton, but I'm just wondering if you guys think that they're going to acquire anybody. I mean, they're a team that could probably afford to give up a draft pick or, you know, like somebody who is, let's say, for lack of a better term, a bit of a bench warmer.
You're 100% right. They fit into the category that I was referring to. Teams that want to make a move once it becomes clear that they're going to make the playoffs. Once it becomes clear where they're weak, or when they can determine, you know, whenever that time arrives, when they start figuring, okay, here's where we're weak. How do we fit? You know, how do we work against Rochester? What if we have to play Buffalo in the championship? You know, those kinds of things enter into the equation, right? So, you know, Edmonton right now, you know, they're golden. Haven't lost yet. Does that mean they don't have any holes? You know, the great teams, and I go back to what I said before, the most important position on a team is GM. The GM is the guy that makes all the decisions. A coach may look good, but the GM brings them in. A player may look good, but the GM brings them in, and he fits in with the coach that he's hired. You know, it's you could hire a great coach and bring in a great player, but oops, they don't get along there isn't the cohesiveness or the conversation that needs to take place in an agreeable fashion between the player and the coach. We've seen this 1,000 times, guys. And you know, that's where, you know, a GM now has got to look at, the GM of Edmonton has to look at his team and realistically say, now, have we won these games because we've been playing over our head, and or there's a weakness that I see that we have and nobody's found it yet, and do I want to make sure that I cover it when it's necessary? You know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, yeah, you're right. And I think they can. They can make a move. You know, a team, just because they're in the playoffs doesn't mean that they don't need to make any additions. Now, they're not going
to
give away.
More of it has to do with what kind of injuries are going to be occurring, if any.
Long term.
Right.
More than anything, right?
Yeah. Something that's going to affect them down the road.
That's another
something
that's
minor
another
for a week
reason.
Or two. I don't think they're going to look bat an eyelash. But if they're going to lose a player like Minnesota lost Suter last year for the rest of the season, for most of the season, and they had to make do and start making moves. Something like that, I think Edmonton's going to start. But, you know, barring something like that, unless that magical deal for that one specific magic player is there, I really don't think that they're going to do too much.
Yeah, in other words, if a guy on your wish list all of a sudden springs loose and
well,
they're not
exactly
asking much more, and they're not asking that much, you know, much more than what
we're talking about moves, and I'm just looking down here, and the Rock actually made a couple of small moves.
Mm-hmm.
They released A.J. Masson and Craig England today, and if you remember, Frank, Craig England was part of that demise going from the penalty box back to the penalty box after a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chris White is now back, who's been injured all season, and he's been put onto the active roster. And they've brought up Dustin Dunn from the practice roster and put him on the active roster. Excuse me. So a few things
are
wheeling around in there
physical?
To try and change up a bit.
Are any of these guys physical?
Chris White is. Chris White was the captain of the Bandits, and he's a very physical player, a good defenseman, solid. Sometimes takes a couple of penalties that he shouldn't, but he's going to add quite a bit of, A, veteran presence, and, B, grit. And I think that's something that
that's
we need to have game a little bit and
short of
in the future to come.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. We've got about 40 minutes left, less than that. Let's go through the statistics. And the points leader this week is John Grant Jr., with 53, Reese Dutch with 50, Garrett Billings with 49, Sean Evans 47, Kyle Buchanan 42. Now, Garrett Billings has had a real good couple of weeks. He's risen in the standings. He's all the way up to third now. And the buddy that you mentioned, Bullock? Was it Bullock?
Yep. Buchanan.
He was the player of the week.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
The Minnesota guy?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the player of the week. So he really did have a good week, Gary.
Yes, he did. Now, seeing John Grant there, he was probably the only bright side that that Colorado had in that 19-9 shellacking. Just looking at my stats here, he was in on just about everything, just about every single goal that that happened. Grant. Yeah, guys like Reese Dutch, again, another big game with 4 goals and 7 assists to add to it. Yep.
Okay, let's move on to the goals.
Oh, yeah,
goals
3 goals,
leaders.
5 assists. But, yeah, he just added to his points. Incredible there.
Adam Jones has 25 goals. Dane Doby, 23. John Grant Jr., 22. Reese Dutch, 22. Drew Westervelt, 19. This top five hardly changed this week. They've been, you know, staying ahead of the pack. And Adam Jones has had a real good year.
Yeah, but he's also played 10 games, and he hasn't really done all that much in the last couple of weeks. But because he's had those couple of games, that's why I think he's in the lead. Once the other guys start catching him, I think he's going to start moving down the list a little bit. Same with Drew Westervelt. He's been in there for, I think, 9 of those 10 games, and he's got 19 goals. Now, Reese Dutch, he had a great week, like I just mentioned, and he's on the upswing, too, because he's pretty much the offense for Vancouver.
And he's doing a great job. Sean Evans
leads
the assists pack. Garrett Billings, who's been improving week to week with 33, John Grant Jr., 31, Ryan Ward with 30, and Dan Dawson with 29. Dan's made a move, and he's been good all year.
Yeah, well, Dan had 10 assists in the Toronto game, so that I'm sure helped totals out quite a bit. Sean Evans had a great game in that 20-9 thing. He scored quite a bit. He assisted on all the rest, so he's been right up there. And John Grant also had the game for Colorado. So these guys being there is no surprise, really.
Not at all. Loose ball leaders, 109. Bob Snyder, Jeff Snyder, his brother, 100. Brody Merrill with 98, Jay Thornbear 85, and Jordan McIntosh with 74. This is an important part in the game that we talked about, loose balls, you know, getting possession of the ball after where normally you would lose it, And it makes things a lot easier for the offense, doesn't it? And, in fact, the defense. If you've got the ball, it's kind of hard for them to score.
Yeah, and coincidentally enough, all face-off guys, yeah?
Uh-huh, absolutely. Almost identical.
Yeah, and Jeff picked up on his brother Bob this week because he had a game of games. Again, it's really nice to see Jay Thornberry there. I'd say he's fulfilled his role. He's really stepped into that role of a face-off guy and a loose ball guy for Buffalo. I think there's just only upside. I think he's just that diamond in the rough.
The penalty minute leaders, Matt Beers with 37. Ilya Gajic, 33. Joel McCready, 31. Dan Ball, 29. And John Tavares, a well-known name in sporting circles and especially in lacrosse, with 27. The old guy still has grit.
That's a little bit of a shocker for me, seeing Tavares up in that thing. But what people don't remember is years ago when he was younger, he was quite feisty also, but he was also smart and not really getting caught doing things. They seem to be keeping an eye on him, and he seems to be getting called on these things now.
Is that John Tavares of the NHL? Is that his uncle?
Yep.
That is.
Okay.
That's exactly who he is.
Yeah.
Power play goals. Colin Doyle had a good week this week and climbed up the power play standings. Jordan Hall, Tracy Kolesky, Dane Doby, and Jeff Shatler all have 6.
Yeah, you're looking at a couple of roughnecks in there, and no surprise in there because they have just a tremendous offense. Tracy Kolesky, is really nice to see him up there because he was just about written off in Buffalo as being too old, too slow, and he's obviously got a couple more years left in those legs and hands. And Jordan Hall is still in there after missing 2 games for work-related issues, and he's still up there. But Colin had a couple of power play goals in that Rochester game, which vaulted him over. So it's a really, really good list here.
Shots on goal leaders, 109 for John Grant Jr., Reese Dutch, 89, Stefan LeBlanc, 78, Adam Jones, 76, Garrett Billings, 75. That's something the Rock weren't doing early, and now they seem to LeBlanc has really woken up, and he's getting a lot of shots off, as is Garrett Billings, and Garrett's becoming very successful in scoring either goals or assists in recent time.
Well, again, it's no surprise that the players and shot leaders are the same ones as the players and goal leaders and assists. So the more you're going to shoot, the more you're going to score. Simple.
Now, here's a quality I really like, the forced turnovers leaders. Tyler Garrison has 18 forced turnovers. Kyler Rubbish has 14. Adam Jones, 13, as does Scott Campbell and Ilya Gajic. This is an important factor in a game. We watch these guys whack each other mercilessly, and it's legal. We saw some real physical activity in the corners with the Rock playing Rochester. And if you get a chance to go to an NLL game, man, if you like the heavy hitting and the slashing, it's amazing how much a player has to put up with once he has the ball in that net.
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, that's one thing I can speak to as somebody who's had limited, chance to watch lacrosse. That's what draws you on the defensive side is just the beating that the offensive players are able to take. And then what really does it for me on the offensive side of the ball is the passing, guys. I mean, is there another sport where more miraculous passes are made? Like, I don't think there is.
Or shots, for that matter.
Or
the big
shots,
one nowadays,
you know, I mean,
the big one, you know, in hockey, they got that between the legs shot. In lacrosse,
yeah.
it's the blind behind the back shot on goal. And it almost worked for Rochester in the game against the Rock, eh, Gary?
It did. And last week it worked for Garrett Billings against Philadelphia. So it does work quite a bit. And when it does work, it's magical when you can see it.
And
yeah.
The other thing is you can't be in the crease when you're shooting on goal. So guys become airborne.
Right.
And we saw one of those,
like
too,
handball.
And that's just amazing. Oh, amazing. Totally amazing.
And you get some of the guys who are really athletic who are jumping from behind the net and try and dunking it in, too, and still not hitting the lines until
like
the ball is in.
That's like handball, which is really big in Europe.
Yep. The Wins leaders, Anthony Cosmo with 6, along with Aaron Bold, Matt Vince with 5, Mike Poulin with 4, and along with Dylan Ward. Now, winning is a function of the team, but goaltenders can steal games. And and Cosmo has played really well this year.
He has. He's had a couple of slow seasons the last few, but a lot of it had to do with the defense. I think this year he's just seeing the ball well. He's got his angles down pat. He's super athletic, and he's just a rock for Buffalo. Absolutely there for him at all times.
Actually, you know,
Aaron Bold,
if he played for Toronto, I'd call him a rock. But he's more of a
Well, he did start here.
He's more of a bandit.
He was a backup to Whipper, but we had Whipper, right? So.
But he's more of a bandit in Buffalo.
That's it. He's been stealing games for sure.
And that's a good thing, man.
Yeah, and we've seen Matt Vince firsthand last week. He was just completely everywhere. Anywhere you could think of, he was there.
He sure was.
And these things are reflected in their goals against average, too. Aaron Bold with under an 8 goals against average is just unbelievable. That's just outstanding in a game where, you know, an average is 10 or 11 goals. To be down under 8 is just, you know, you're giving your team, even on off nights, huge chances to win. And Matt Vince is right behind him again, you know, doing exactly what Matt Vince has been doing for years. And in my opinion, although Aaron Bolt's got the better goals against average, I still think Matt Vince is the best goalie in this league.
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be interesting when these teams meet, let me tell you. It's going to be a great game. The saves leaders, Tyler Richards, this is more about a function of poor defense. Tyler Richards has had to make 372 saves. Anthony Cosmo, 337. Evan Kirk, 313. Dylan Ward, 271. Matt Vince, 260. So it's a pretty tough road to hoe for players, or at least goaltenders, when the defense, you know. What we saw today, to go back to that hockey game, because it is exactly, you know, what makes a goaltender great. And to really not let that extra goal go in is the difference maker. The kid in Latvia, you know, 2 goals on what, 60-some-odd shots? Pretty amazing.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Pretty amazing.
He had the game of his life, and if anybody in the NHL was watching, I believe he's already been drafted, but wasn't it Yzerman who drafted him? So he kind of sat there trying to keep a smirk off his face while sitting with the Team Canada people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played in the East Coast Hockey League, the American Hockey League, and yes, he was drafted by Tampa. He is a Tampa property, if I remember correctly. That's what they were saying today.
Yeah. So
where is he right now? Isn't he in Syracuse?
Is he not in the KHL?
No,
I think he's in the American Hockey League.
Yeah,
is he?
He's in the A.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it goes to show
what's Buffalo's team in the
Rochester
American?
Rochester.
Oh, he might be with Rochester then. I don't know.
Hmm.
Or Tampa Bay, pardon me.
Well, Tampa Bay. It's the Crunch. I think it's Syracuse.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's Syracuse then, fellas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely be worth taking a look at Syracuse when they come up to play the Marlies.
There you go.
No doubt.
So we've got... that pretty much wraps up the info on the show. At this point, I guess We can also remind you that you're listening to Candid Frank Live. This is the National Lacrosse League edition, and with us tonight is a learner, otherwise known as Kelly Bale, and a teacher, and that's a double entendre, by the way, folks, Gary Group, and me. You know, so as a teacher and as a student, any other questions, Kelly, come up that you'd like to ask about the game of lacrosse that you would like to understand better?
You know, I had thought of a few things throughout the discussion, but just been trying to pay such close attention to you guys to learn as much as I can, and I actually think I have actually learned quite a bit here tonight. You know, you put things into perspective as far as the structure of the league. You know, you tried to give me a sense of, you know, how the players are that play this great game, and you know, you've been through some stats and stuff like that, and that's the stuff that I eat up. That's why I'm a sports nut, is I just love looking at stats and analyzing things and coming up with my own perspectives on things. And, yeah, this platform here has allowed me to do that with lacrosse, and, you know, definitely looking forward to watching some more games. Haven't really been able to work it into the schedule because I am a sports nut, but just taking more of an interest in it than ever right now. So,
well, the one thing that you can do, Kelly, that the CFL doesn't do, is you can actually catch every game on YouTube. All you have to do is go to the Lacrosse Network, and you can catch any of the games that are archived, or you catch the games live as they happen, because obviously they're not always on TV. But any game will be on YouTube. So you can
all
catch them anytime you want, anytime you want to see something, or their highlights, or whatever else. It's all there.
Right. Excellent to know.
All right, so I'll try a question for Gary.
All right.
Some of the rules you know, equipment is something that people maybe don't understand as far as what's legal and what isn't legal. And what they do, Kelly, in the National Lacrosse League, they automatically do equipment checks. That's something you don't normally see in a league, right, Gary? In any other sport?
No, in any other sport, only if a team wants to call it and risk getting a penalty. Like in hockey, if you want to get a stick measured, if the stick is legal, you get a penalty. And if the stick is illegal, they get a penalty. But in lacrosse, every single whistle, they're picking guys at random, and that includes goalies for pad size, depth of stick, whether it's a pinch stick for face-off guys, which make it a lot easier to vacuum up balls.
And the net's too tight. It's too tight. Explain what they mean, just to help people who
stick, you'll see a lot of face-off guys try this. So that when they put their stick over top of the ball, they don't have to worry about cupping it. It's already inside the stick, so that it's there and they can start going with it. Of course, it's illegal, but you know, they're going to try take any advantage they can. And they say every whistle, they're going to measure at random, whether it be number 12 or number 22, or be it the goalies will go together. And they'll measure equipment, measure sticks, measure pads, and if something's found to be illegal, you get a penalty for it. Just that simple.
And it's just random during the game?
It's all random, and that's what keeps everybody on their toes. If you want to take the risk, you know, most times you'll probably get away with it, but who knows if that's the clutch time when you do get caught, so if you want to take that risk or not.
And that's the difficulty.
That's the nuance is what it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Phyllis Babin just sent us a message saying thank you for explaining the rules and explaining it, because she's going to see a game for the first time. She's Bruce John Inch's best friend. We're going to be going to the game on Saturday, and I guess it's helpful to her to hear these rules. So, you know, it's four quarters.
Not going to regret it.
Nope. four quarters, and they do check the equipment all the time. Like basketball, they have the over and back rule, so that, you know, if the ball, even if you take a shot and miss the net and it hits the backboards and it ends up going beyond the half line to your side, it's an over and back rule. The shot
unless
clock,
it's off post, unless it's off.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, like I said, if you miss the net, then that's like not taking a shot. It just eliminates teams doing it on purpose. So
right.
At the end of the day, like we said, and after every goal, there's a face-off. So, you know, you could literally have a run. And that's one thing in lacrosse that you can do that you can't do in basketball. And there is an inherent advantage in face-offs. In hockey, yes, they're very, you know, they're very, we hear it all the time now that face-offs are very important, but I don't think it's more than a 5 or 10% swing in goals scored because you win a face-off. Because you can win, you know, you can win the face-off, but lose the possession on the win. Whereas in lacrosse,
right.
Once that ball's in your net, I'm not going to say it's impossible for you to lose the ball, but it is difficult to say the least. And you know, a possession in lacrosse, like basketball, most times leads to a goal. If it doesn't lead to a goal, we go back to the thing I said about goaltenders and, you know, making the big saves and keeping their team. That's why goaltenders are so important to play well. Now, when you see the equipment that goaltenders wear and they walk towards you, the net is narrower than a hockey net. You wonder where the heck the ball goes that it can actually go in. Well, that's a testament to how well these shooters shoot. And also their sticks are regulated to not help them, to the stiffness of the net as well, which helps in the shooting aspect. That can't be an unfair amount of the stick being tight. So there's a lot of ways that when you watch the game, the most important thing I can say about when you watch the game is I'm not saying don't follow the play, but it's amazing how much goes on, outside of the guy that has the ball. It doesn't matter where you look. There's a battle for territory. And Gary, that's the thing that excites me the most, is that everywhere there's a battle for territory.
There's a battle for territory. There's a battle for opening up shooting lanes. People are setting up picks.
Yep.
A little bit of interference here and there, which is all legal. And then a lot of movement around to try and get that open look, to try and get that quick shot. But stepping back for one second, since Drew, you said you're a stats fanatic. The one thing that's different is in hockey, if it hits the post, it's not counted as a shot. Whereas in lacrosse, it is counted as a shot, and it is a reset of the shot clock.
Okay. Yeah, more like the basketball where if it hits the rim, it resets the shot clock.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, I gotcha.
It cannot be said that they didn't try to score a basket or score a goal.
I just can't believe, like, imagine the NBA if they jumped it up every time a team scored a bucket.
That would make, you know what? That would make the game really, really interesting.
It would. I mean, Yao Ming would be the MVP, right?
Well, jump all of a sudden. Well, you
we would actually find a reason for Bargnani.
Yeah, minute goal. He'd be MVP, right?
There you go. And you know, it would give more weight to the guys that could go vertical, right? And even though basketball is noted for guys that can go vertical. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, it makes things really interesting, and you know, that's why sometimes games get away from teams because momentum in lacrosse it is a real challenge to stem it. You know, when momentum's coming up against you, it's not like basketball where you get the ball back and you can work your way back. The momentum is such a key factor, you know, in lacrosse. It's awesome. You know, that you always have to have your foot on the pedal. You know, you can't take a break for a second.
Kind of looks like an aerial dogfight at times, you know, like Flair's just running in waves at the other guys.
Oh, hey, And you know, the past game that we went to see, I maintain, and it, this is just my interpretation of the game between The Rock and Rochester, and it appears maybe the coach agreed with me a little bit. That's why I asked the question, was the, were either of the guys that they brought in, were they physical? And apparently one of them is one of the more physical players. They were dominated physically, and it was, you know, the one thing about these players is they don't have die in them. You know, they never say die. Even though The Rock were pound for pound much smaller, they still tried. You know, they tried. But then by then the official said, oh, I'm not going to let this game get out of hand. But, you know, by then it was too late.
Yeah.
You know, the one call that he missed led to a couple of goals and gave Rochester the belief that they could be physical and get away with it. And then, of course, The Rock tried matching them physically, and that's when the game got away from them. So really, lacrosse as well, what you'll notice is that there really has to be a balance on the team. You know, you can't be a one-trick pony. You see in some sports where teams can actually be successful if they're just an offensive team or just a defensive team. Unfortunately, in lacrosse, you don't get away with it in that game. In that game, you have to have great goaltending, great defense, great offense, and incredible team play. If you do that, you're going to win more than your share of games. If you don't, then it starts getting iffy and dicey, and that's where Philadelphia falls in, you know, to an issue. And I believe The Rock physically, they're too easy to push around. I've seen it, and in a couple of the games this year, they survived it with Calgary. I was surprised that they survived it with Calgary. You know, that's an important factor to me. In my game, lacrosse is a very physical game to me. You really do, not necessarily you don't have to intimidate the other team, but if you let them know that you can't be intimidated, that's something that you have an edge over the other team, because now they got to lay back, you know. And it won't show that you're physical. It'll just show that they respect the fact that you're physical. And the game against Rochester, there was a lack of respect by Rochester towards the Toronto team, and hopefully the GM, for that team's sake, you know, brought in a guy that can at least keep the other team honest. And that's all we're talking about here. We're not talking about beating people's brains out. We're talking about keeping each other honest and, you know, having enough physicality that the other team doesn't take liberties. Gary?
Yeah, I think that Chris White's going to make quite a bit of difference on the defense there. And yeah, I agree. Rochester took liberties, and when we had, well, they picked their spots is what they did. I thought it was a pretty gutless thing jumping on Patty Merrill, but you know, the same gentleman, Mr. Allen, didn't want to tangle with Bill Hostrauser. So you know, they kind of picked their spots, and they got away with some things. And Toronto seemed to get called every time they did something in retaliation, which is what happens in hockey too. You retaliate, you're going to go to the box. So they have to get a little smarter on that one too, and not fall into those traps.
Yeah, and make the stupid penalties become a factor.
Yeah, it's come over from the Buffalo thing where number three on your list is always no dumb penalties. That seems to come over here now, because we've been taking a lot of dumb penalties over the last number of weeks, and it's killed us. You know, these power play goals have just been, you know, just been killing us. So, you know, if we want to right the ship, is to stop taking dumb penalties.
And that goes for every team. You know, penalties can be a factor, especially if you're, you know, up against a team with some great passers and great shooters, because that combination is deadly on a power play.
Sure, you got a team like Rochester who's got Kehoe, who's got Dawson, who's got Jameson. You know, you can't give them odd man advantages, because they're going to kill you. They're going to kill you over and over and over again. And it doesn't really matter who the team is if you're going to give them these kind of advantages. So the best bet is just to stay out of the box.
Absolutely. Well, listen, guys, it's been a real pleasure talking lacrosse. As always, Gary, thank you so much for your contribution. We'll look forward to seeing Aaron William Freeland come back next week. And Kelly, you're always welcome, as you know, on the show. And it's always fun to talk lacrosse. And, you know, if you're in the neighborhood, There are 9 teams in the National Lacrosse League, and if you're in the neighborhood of one of those cities, and if you don't, you allow me, I'll mention the cities again. The Buffalo Bandits, Rochester Nighthawks, Toronto Rock, Philadelphia Wings, Minnesota Swarm. They make up the Eastern Division, while the Western Division is made up of the Edmonton Rush, Calgary Roughnecks, Colorado Mammoth, and the Vancouver Stealth. And all you have to do is go to NLL.com, and all the teams and all the links to all the teams and where you can buy their tickets are there. The schedules are there as well, and there are links on NLL.com. To YouTube, so that you can watch these games either live or, you know,
archived.
I guess downloaded, archived. Thank you. So,
also,
you know,
I don't know about other cities, but in Toronto, you can go to Costco and pick up Toronto Rock vouchers and pick up Toronto Rock gold tickets for $42.99. So I'm not sure if it's in all the other cities that there are teams. I know there are Costco's in all the other cities, but... you can always have a look and inquire.
Yep, and if you're in the Toronto area and you're watching a Toronto game, the team enjoys post-game meal and drinks at Joe Badali's. And Lori would never forgive me if I didn't mention that. So at Joe Badali's, downtown Toronto, steps from the ACC. And pregame. And... Go ahead.
156 Front Street, I believe.
And if you've been alive over the last 100-some-odd years, you'll know where it is because it is one of the longest-standing restaurants in Toronto. And
I've been
it
there
has a,
from Regina.
There you go. It's a deep. It's yeah. a deep. There's a deep history in that place, and you can get together
sure.
with the team, the players, the coaches. In
and
fact,
us.
I met and us and I met and I met the commissioner of the league. And had a chance to talk to him as well about the game in between conversations with the rest of the world in Joe Badali's. So for those of you that get an opportunity to watch NLL Lacrosse, National League Lacrosse, we look forward to having you listen on the program and or give us a call at 714-242-5250. And, of course, follow the link. Go to Candid Frank Live, Stan Ishii on Facebook. And you can message me, and I'll be more than glad to call you if you don't have a long-distance plan. You can also email me at candidfranklive, one word, at gmail.com if you'd like to communicate with the show and or you have a comment or a question or a player you'd like to have interviewed. If we can do it, we'll do it for you. Actually, starting this week, I'm going to try and see if I can get to the track, which is the practice facility. And hopefully meet up with some players, not only of the Rock, hopefully of other teams in the league. And I have heard that they do practice there, so there's a good chance we can interview some of the other players on some of the other teams. And we did develop an association with the Calgary Roughnecks, and we'll be calling them to see who they can send on our show to be on our show, and we'll be interviewing them as well. And I'd like to talk to the Roughnecks about you know, the association with the Calgary Flames and how helpful that is. That'll be all in our near future. For now, though, we're going to call it a night. Thank you for tuning in to Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League show with Gary Grube and our special guest, Kelly Bale. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you again next week.
Calgary, Friday, January 3rd. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com.
Okay, we're over at Joe Badali's. Everybody's had something to eat. Everybody's had something to drink. And tonight, maybe some of the fans are drinking a little more. Not a great outcome for the team, but, you know, it's been that kind of season. It's up and down. And I'm with Rob Marshall. He's a defender for the Toronto Rock. The guys had a tough night tonight. That was a real. It really seemed like the team was snake bit. We were going really well, and then you hit a wall.
Yeah, I mean, we came out. We had a great first quarter, and you know, we were up 7-5, 7-4 maybe at one point. And you know what? They come, they score three or four unanswered. You know, we're down 2 going into halftime, and you know, we kind of got away from our game plan, and you know, it just kind of fell apart from there. And you know. You know, we just didn't stick to our game plan, basically. I mean, we're letting gap shots all night, and You know, Nick Rose and Zach Wojcik played unreal. I mean, they made saves when they need to, but I think our defense kind of let us down a bit.
I think that's a fair statement as well, but also your offense couldn't penetrate Vince. Vince was impenetrable today. As a defender, that must be very interesting to see from your perspective. You're watching the saves that he's making, and it was really making it difficult for you guys to really carry the day. You were really playing well, and I think at one point you were out shooting them 30-20, and basically Vince played. You got to give the guy credit. He played really well.
Yeah, he's a good goalie, but at the same time, we had our chances. He made some great stops, but like I said, at the same time, our offense feeds off our defense, and our defense feeds off our offense, right? So, you know, the defense was kind of struggling for a bit there, which, you know, kind of slowed things down. They were getting their timely goals at some times, but, you know, we need to create some more transition, create some more opportunities, and, you know, maybe our offense will start clicking.
Well, it's only one game, so there's no point. Nobody's going to set this one aside and start again tomorrow. Let's get more on a personal level with you and your lacrosse experience. When did you start playing lacrosse, and what attracted you to the game?
I started when I was 3 years old. I grew up in a small town called Arthur. I have a big family, so all our cousins, you know, were involved. It was basically the only thing to do in the summertime. So, you know, we went out 3 years old, just little guys, and we were kind of running around the floor, you know, 10 guys chasing the ball. And we kind of grew up all together. It was good. I mean, we had the same core of group growing up, which is good, which we have, I know, some real good friends. So, you know, I started in Arthur, and, you know, I started to end up Junior B in Alora Mohawks, which I kind of looked up to when I was younger. We'd always go to the games, and, you know, from there, got an open tryout from John Lovell and Terry Sanderson, and just made the best of it.
It's a game that... I guess it'd be fair to say that the pool of players is not as, as clearly North American as it is Canadian, Southern Ontario, Native Canadians, and also the West Coast with Vancouver. It must be strange to play with local guys and then end up playing against them with, different cities like Colorado, Edmonton. It must be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you grow up summertime lacrosse in MSL. You grow up, playing with Cody Jameson, Craig Point, you know, Stephen Keogh, all the guys from Rochester. And, they're good players and all, but, you know, once the NL comes around, we're different teams, we're opponents. So you don't, there's no friendships involved. So you go out and you just, it's a battle.
How exciting was it the first time you strapped on the equipment to play pro? I'm sure that must have been real thrilling. What was the first thing that went through your head when you're coming out of the tunnel?
I came out of the tunnel for warm-ups. I looked around, and there was probably 1,000 fans, and I've never played in that big of a crowd before, that big of an atmosphere, for one. I would come out for the game time, and there's 18,000 out there. You get your first shift under your belt, make a play, try to get a big hit or a loose ball or something, and just go from there.
It has to be a wonderful experience. Thanks for taking the time with us. It's a long season. Today's only one game. There's always another game tomorrow. And they really are this year, as a defender, the one last question I'd like to ask you is the shorter bench. How does it affect you personally as a defender, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, we try to transition the ball a little more, stay up play for defender-wise. As a defender, you try to stay and play a little bit more, try to get the ball up there. With only being able to dress six offensive players, they need a rest once in a while. So you get up there, you kind of muck around, set some picks, and maybe you'll score one once in a while.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Rob Marshall, defender with the Toronto Rock.
Thank you.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, the Candid Frank Live Show. Candid Frank Live with
about half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger. Candid Frank Live. Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike. The CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale.
Manasse, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medin. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This is a mini CFL show. See if anybody's paying attention. Oh, they can't be because this is after. This will be something that they didn't realize they missed. My goodness. Oh, no. Well, maybe we can't do this right now. Maybe we won't. But one more thing we can do. We can play this as our closing. Everybody have a nice night.